clutching the little pouch. "Get in before he gets us." "What other choice do we have?" Panamon declared irritably, motioning to Keltzer to pick him up. The obedient giant bent down and carefully lifted Panamon in the cradle of his two massive arms. Shay retrieved the wounded thief's fallen broadsword and followed the slowly departing form of Keltzet, who proceeded southward with relaxed, easy strides. Panamon talked steadily as they walked, calling on Shay to hurry, chiding Keltzet on being too rough in his duty as bearer of the wounded. Shay could not bring himself to be quite so relaxed, and was content with bringing up the rear, glancing uneasily from side to side as they moved southward, searching vainly for some sign of movement that might indicate where the danger lay. In his right hand he clutched tightly the leather pouch with the invaluable elf stones, their only weapon against the power of the warlock lord. They were about 100 yards from the scene of their battle with the Skullbearer when Panamon called a sudden halt, complaining bitterly of an injured shoulder. Gently, Keltzet lowered his burden to the ground and stood up. "My shoulder is never going to stand such wanton disregard of its tissues and bones," growled Panamon Creel irritably, and looked meaningfully at Shay. Instantly the Veilman knew that this was the place, and his hands shook as he loosened the strings on the pouch and withdrew the elfstones. A moment later Keltzet stood leisurely beside the still muttering thief, the great mace held loosely in one hand. Shay glanced around hastily, his eyes coming to rest directly on the huge clump of brush immediately to the left of the other two. His heart jumped to his throat as one section of the brush moved ever so slightly. Then Keltzet made his move. With a sharp lunge, he whirled about, leaped into the center of the brush, and was lost from view. Chapter 20. What followed was complete pandemonium. A terrible, high-pitched shriek sounded from the bushes, and the entire mass of shrubbery shook violently. Panamon struggled wildly to his knees, calling to Shay to throw him the great broadsword which the fear-struck Veilman still clutched tightly in his left hand. Shay stood frozen in place, his other hand clasping the powerful elf stones in readiness, waiting in terror for the assault that surely would come from the unknown creature in the brush. Panamon finally fell back in hopeless exhaustion, unable to get Shay's attention and incapable of walking over to where he stood. There were a few more cries from the heavy bushes, some vague thrashing within, and then silence. A moment later the durable Keltzet emerged, the heavy mace still held in one lowered hand. In the other was the squirming, twisting body of a gnome, his neck held fast in the iron grip of the troll. The gnarled yellow body appeared childlike next to the huge frame of its captor, the arms and legs moving all at once in different directions like snakes caught by their tails. The gnome was one of the familiar hunters, clothed in a leather tunic, hunting boots, and sword belt. The sword was missing, and Shay correctly surmised that the struggle in the bushes involved the disarming of the little fellow. Keltzet came over to Panamon, who had managed to raise himself back up to a sitting position, and dutifully held forth the struggling captive for inspection. "Let me go! Let me go, curse you!" the thrashing gnome cried venomously. "You have no right. I have done nothing. I'm not even armed, I tell you. Let me go!" Panamon Creel looked at the little creature humorously, shaking his head in relief. Finally, as the gnome continued to plead, the thief burst out laughing. "What a terrible foe, Keltzet. Why, he might have destroyed us all had you not captured him. That must have been a fearful struggle. Ha ha, I can't believe it. And we were afraid of another of those winged black monsters." Shay was not quite so inclined to be amused by the incident, recalling clearly the close calls the company had already had with the little yellow creatures while traveling through the Anar. They were dangerous and crafty, a foe whom he did not regard as harmless. Panamon looked over, and upon spying the serious countenance, ceased his chiding of the captive and turned his attention to Shay. "Do not be angry, Shay. It's more habit than stupidity when I laugh at these things. I laugh at them to stay a sane man. But enough of all this. What do we do with our little friend, eh?" The gnome stared fearfully at the no longer laughing man, the large eyes wide as the insistent voice died away to a low whine. "Please, let me go," he begged subserviently. "I will go away and say nothing to anyone about you. I will do whatever you say, good friends. Just let me go." Keltset still held the hapless gnome by the scruff of his neck about a foot off the ground in front of Shay and Panamon, and the little fellow was beginning to choke violently from the tight clasp. Seeing the prisoner's plight, Panamon at last motioned for the rock troll to lower his victim to the ground and release his grip. Pausing for a moment's serious contemplation of the gnome's eager plea, the thief looked over at Shay and winked quickly, turning back to the captive sharply and snapping the pike at the end of his left arm up to the yellow throat. "I can see no reason for permitting you to live, let alone go free, gnome," he announced menacingly. "I think it would be best for all concerned if I just cut your throat right here and now. Then none of us would have to worry about you further." Shay did not believe the thief was serious, but his voice sounded as if he were in deadly earnest. The terrified gnome gulped and held forth his hands in a final desperate cry for mercy. He whined and cried so that Shay finally became almost embarrassed for him. Panamon made no move, but only sat there staring into the unfortunate fellow's horror-stricken face. "No, no, I beg you, don't kill me," the frantic gnome pleaded, his wide green eyes shifting from one face to the next. "Please, please, let me live. I can be of use to you. I can help. I can tell you about the Sword of Shannara. I can even get it for you." Shay started involuntarily at the unexpected mention of the sword, and he placed a restraining hand on Panamon's wide shoulder. "So you can tell us about the sword, can you?" The icy voice of the thief sounded only slightly interested, and he ignored Shay completely. "What can you tell us?" The wiry yellow frame relaxed slightly, and the eyes returned to normal size, shifting about eagerly, seizing on any chance to stay alive. Yet Shay saw something else there, something he could not quite define. It was almost a fervid cunning, revealed as the gnome momentarily relaxed his carefully masked feelings. A second later it was gone, replaced by a look of total subjugation and helplessness. "I can lead you to the sword if you wish," he whispered harshly, as if he were afraid someone would hear. "I can take you to where it is, if you let me live." Panamon moved the sharp iron tip of his piked hand back from the throat of the cringing gnome, leaving just a small trace of blood on the yellow neck. Keltset had not moved and gave no indication that he had any interest in what was happening. Shay wanted to warn Panamon how important that gnome might be if there was even the slightest chance of finding the Sword of Shannara, but he realized the thief preferred to keep the captive gnome guessing. The Veilman could not be sure how much Panamon Creel knew about the legend. So far he had shown little concern with the races generally, and had not indicated he knew anything about the history of the Sword of Shannara. The grim features of the thief relaxed briefly, and a faint smile crossed his lips as he eyed the still quivering captive. "Is this sword valuable, gnome?" he queried easily, almost slyly. "Can I sell it for gold?" "It is priceless to the right people," the other promised, nodding eagerly. "There are those who would pay anything, give anything to get possession of it. In the Northland..." He ceased talking abruptly, afraid that he had already said too much. Panamon smiled wolfishly and nodded to Shay. "This gnome says it could be worth money to us," he mocked quietly. "And the gnome wouldn't lie, would you, gnome?" The yellowhead shook vehemently. "Well then, perhaps we should let you live long enough to prove you have something of value to barter for your worthless hide. I wouldn't want to throw away a chance to make money simply to satisfy my inborn desire to cut the throat of a gnome when I get one within my grasp. What do you think, gnome?"
"You understand perfectly. You know my value," whined the little fellow, fawning at the knees of the smiling thief. "I can help. I can make you rich. You can count on me."
Panamon was smiling broadly now, his big frame relaxed and his good hand on the gnome's small shoulder, as if they were old friends. He patted the stooped shoulder a few times, as if to put the captive at ease, and nodded reassuringly, looking from the gnome to Kelset to Shay and back again for several long seconds. "Tell us what you're doing way out here by yourself, gnome," Panamon urged a moment later. "By the way, what are you called?"
"I am Oral Fane, a warrior of the Pell tribe of the Upper Anar," he answered eagerly. I was on a courier mission from Perenor when I came upon this battlefield. They were all dead, all of them, and there was nothing I could do. Then I heard you, and I hid. I was afraid you were elves."
He paused and looked fearfully at Shay, noting the youth's elven features with dismay. Shay made no move, but waited to see what Panamon would do. Panamon just looked understandingly at the gnome and smiled in friendly fashion.
"Oral Fane, of the Pell tribe," the tall thief repeated slowly. "A great tribe of hunters, brave men."
He shook his head as if deeply regretting something and turned again to the mystified gnome.
"Oral Fane, if we are going to be of any service to one another, we must have mutual trust. Lies can only hinder the purpose binding our new partnership. There was a Pell standard on the battlefield, the standard of your tribe in the Gnome Nation. You must have been with them when they fought."
The gnome stood speechless, a mixture of fear and doubt creeping slowly back into his shifting green eyes. Panamon continued to smile easily at him.
"Just look at yourself, Oral Fane, covered with specks of blood and a bad cut on your forehead at the hairline. Why hide the truth from us? You had to be here. Isn't that right?"
The persuasive voice coaxed a quick nod out of the other, and Panamon laughed almost merrily.
"Of course you were here, Oral Fane. And when you were set upon by the elf people, you fought until you were wounded, perhaps knocked unconscious, eh? And you lay here until just before we came along. That's the truth of the matter, isn't it?"
"Yes. That's the truth," the gnome agreed eagerly now.
"No, that's not the truth."
There was a moment of stunned silence. Panamon was still smiling, and Oral Fane was caught between emotions, a trace of doubt still in his eyes, a half-smile forming on his lips. Shay looked at both curiously, unable to follow exactly what was happening.
"Listen to me, you lying little rodent."
The smile was gone from Panamon's face, the features hardened as he spoke, the voice cold and menacing once more.
"You have lied from the beginning. A member of the Pell would wear their insignia. You wear none. You weren't wounded in battle. That little scratch on your forehead is nothing. You are a scavenger, a deserter, aren't you? Aren't you?"
The thief had seized the terrified gnome by the front of his hunting tunic and was shaking him so hard that Shay could hear his teeth rattle with the force. The wiry captive was struggling to catch his breath, gasping in disbelief at this sudden turn of events.
Yes, yes.
The admission was throttled out of him at last, and Panamon released him with a quick thrust backward into the grip of the watchful Kelset. A deserter from your own people. Panamon spat the words out in distaste. The lowest form of life that walks or crawls is a deserter. You've been scavenging this battlefield for valuables from the dead. Where are they, Oral Fane? Shay, check in those bushes where he was hiding. As Shay moved toward the brush, the struggling gnome let out the most frightful shriek of dismay imaginable, causing the youth to believe Kelset had twisted his neck off. But Panamon just smiled and nodded for the veilman to proceed, certain now that the gnome had indeed hidden something in the bushes. Shay pushed his way past the thick branches into the center of the clump, searching carefully for any sign of a cache. The ground and the limbs in the center were badly torn up from the struggle between Kelset and the gnome, and there was nothing immediately visible. He hunted about unsuccessfully for several minutes. He was just about to give up when his eye caught a glimpse of something half-buried at the far end of the bushes beneath leaves, branches, and dirt. Using a short hunting knife and his hands, he quickly uncovered a long sack containing metal objects that rattled against one another as he worked. He called out to Panamon that he had discovered something, which immediately set off another series of whining cries from the distraught captive. When the sack was uncovered, he pulled it out of the brush into the fading afternoon sunlight and dropped it before the others. Oral Fane was in a frenzy by this time, and Kelset was forced to use both hands just to hold him. "Whatever's in here is certainly important to our little friend." Panamon grinned at Shay and reached for the sack. Shay moved to his side and peered over the broad shoulders as Panamon untied the leather thong binding the top and reached eagerly into the dark interior. Changing his mind suddenly, the scarlet thief removed his hand and, grabbing the other end of the sack, turned it upside down and poured the contents onto the open earth. The others stared at the cache, looking from item to item curiously. "Junk," growled Panamon Creel after a moment's consideration. "Just junk. The gnome is too stupid even to bother with valuable things." Shay looked at the contents of the sack without answering. Nothing but assorted daggers, knives, and swords in the collection, some still in their leather sheaths. A few pieces of cheap jewelry sparkled in the sunlight, and there were one or two gnome coins, practically worthless to anyone but a gnome. It certainly appeared to be useless junk, but the whining Oral Fane had evidently considered it worth something to him. Shay shook his head in pity for the little gnome. He had lost everything when he turned deserter, and all he had to show for it were these few worthless pieces of metal and cheap jewelry. Now it seemed certain that he would lose his life as well for having dared to lie to the volatile Panamon Creel. "Hardly worth dying for, gnome," Panamon growled, nodding shortly to Kelset, who raised the heavy mace to finish the hapless fellow.
"No, no, wait a minute, please," the gnome cried, his voice edged with a harsh note of desperation. It was the end for him. This was his final plea. "I didn't lie about the sword. I swear I didn't. I can get it for you. Don't you realize what the Sword of Shannara is worth to the Dark Lord?"
Without thinking, Shay put out a hand to grasp Kelset's massive arm. The giant troll seemed to understand. Slowly he lowered the mace and looked curiously at Shay. Panamon Creel opened his mouth angrily and then hesitated. He wanted to learn the truth behind Shay's presence in the Northland, and the secret of this sword evidently had much to do with it. He stared momentarily at the Veilman, then turned back to Kelset,
and shrugged disinterestedly. We can always kill you later, Orlfane, if this is another deception. Put a rope around his worthless neck and bring him along, Celt said. Shay, if you would give me a hand up and an arm to lean on, I think I can make it to the woods. Kelsey will keep a close watch over our clever little deserter. Shay helped the injured Panamon to his feet and tried to support him as he took a few careful test steps. Kelset tied Orlfane and placed a length of rope about his neck so that he could be led. The gnome allowed himself to be bound without complaining, though he was visibly distraught about something. Shay imagined that the fellow was still lying when he said he knew where the sword could be found and was desperately trying to figure out how he would get free from his captors before they discovered his treachery and killed him. While Shay would not himself kill the gnome, nor even agree to have it done, nevertheless he felt little compassion for the deceitful creature. Orlfane was a coward, a deserter, a scavenger, a man without a people or a country. Shay was certain now that the whining, groveling attitude the gnome had displayed earlier was a carefully studied shield for the crafty, desperate creature that lay hidden beneath. Orlfane would cut their throats without the slightest compunction if he thought there would be no danger to himself. Shay almost wished that Keltset had ended their worries a few minutes earlier by finishing the fellow. Shay would have felt easier in his own mind. Panamon signaled that he was ready to proceed toward the woodland, but before they had taken two steps, the whining pleas of Orlfane had stopped them. The unhappy gnome refused to go farther if he were not allowed to keep his sack and its treasures. He set up such a stubborn howl of protest that Panamon was again on the verge of bashing in the hateful yellow head. "What does it matter, Panamon?" Shay finally asked in exasperation. "Let him have his trinkets if it will make him happy. We can get rid of them later after he quiets down." Panamon shook his handsome face in dismay, finally nodding his reluctant acquiescence. He was fed up with Orlfane already. "Very well. I'll give in just this once," the thief agreed. Orlfane immediately quieted down. "However, if he opens his mouth like that once more, I'll cut out his tongue. Kelsey, you keep him away from that sack. I don't want him getting hold of one of those weapons long enough to cut himself free and do us in. Worthless blades probably wouldn't do a neat job of it anyway, and I'd die of blood poisoning." Shay had to laugh in spite of himself. They were poor-looking weapons, though he rather fancied the slim broadsword with the extended arm and burning torch cut into the hilt. Even that one was rather gaudy, the cheap gold paint chipped and flecked about the hilt. Like several of the others, it rested in a worn leather sheath, so it was difficult to tell what condition the blade might be in. At any rate, it could prove dangerous in the hands of the wily Orlfane. Keltset hoisted the sack and its contents over one shoulder, and the party continued on its way toward the woodland. It was a comparatively short hike, but by the time they reached the perimeter of the forest, Shay was exhausted from supporting the weight of the injured Panamon. The little group stopped on the thief's command. As an afterthought, he sent Keltset back to cover their trail and to create a number of false trails that would confuse anyone following. Shay did not object, for although he hoped that Alanon and the others were searching for him, there was a dangerous possibility that patrolling gnome hunters, or worse still, another skull-bearer, might come across their tracks instead. After tying the captive Orlfane to a tree, the rock troll backtracked onto the battlefield to erase any sign of their passage in this direction. Panamon collapsed wearily against a broad maple, and the tired Veilman took up a position opposite him, lying peacefully back on a small grassy knoll, staring absently into the treetops and breathing deeply the forest air.
The sun was fading rapidly now, with the close of the afternoon and the faint beginnings of evening crept into the western sky in streaks of purple and deep blue. Less than an hour of sunlight remained, and the night would help to hide them from their enemies. Shay fervently wished now for the aid of the company, for the strong, wise leadership and fantastic mystical prowess of Alanon, for the courage of the others, Balinor, Hendel, Durin, Dale, and the fiery minion Lee. Most of all, he wished Flick were with him. Flick, with his unwavering, unquestioning loyalty and trust. Panamon Creel was a good man to have on his side, but there were no real ties between them. The thief had lived too long by his wits and cunning to understand basic honesty and truth. And what about Kel'Thuzad? An enigma, even to Panamon. Panamon, you said back there you would explain about Kel'Thuzad, Shay remarked quietly. About how the Skullbearer knew him. For a moment there was no answer, and Shay raised up to see if the man had heard him. Panamon was staring quietly at him. Skullbearer, you seem to know a great deal more about this whole matter than I. You tell me about my giant companion, Shay. That wasn't the truth you told me when you saved me from those gnomes, was it? Shay asked him. He wasn't a freak driven from his village by his own people. He didn't kill them for attacking him, did he? Panamon laughed merrily, the pike coming up to scratch the small mustache. Maybe it was the truth. Maybe those things did happen to him. I don't know. It always seemed to me that something of the sort must have happened to him to make him take up with someone like myself. He's no thief. I don't know what he is. But he is my friend. He is that. I didn't lie to you when I said that.
Where did he come from? Shay asked after a moment's silence.
I found him north of here about 2 months ago. He wandered down out of the Charnel Mountains, battered, beaten, just barely alive. I don't know what happened to him. He never volunteered the information and I didn't ask. He was entitled to keep his past hidden just as I. I took care of him for several weeks. I knew a little sign language and he understood it so we could communicate. I guessed his name from his word signs. We learned a little about each other. Only a little. When he was well, I asked him to come along, and he agreed. We've had some good times, you know. Too bad he's not really a thief. Shay shook his head and chuckled softly at that last remark. Panamon Creel would probably never change. He didn't understand any other way of life and didn't want to. The only people who made any sense to him were those who told the world to hang by its thumbs and took by force what they needed for themselves. Yet friendship remained a prized commodity, even for a thief, and it was something that would not be tossed aside lightly. Even Shay was beginning to feel a strange sort of friendship for the flamboyant Panamon Creel. A friendship that was improbable because their characters and their values were complete opposites. But each had an understanding of what the other felt, though not why he felt it. And there was the experience of the battle shared against a common enemy. Perhaps that was all that anyone ever needed as a basis for friendship. How could the skull creature have known him? Shay persisted. Panamon shrugged casually, indicating he neither knew nor cared. The watchful Veilman felt the latter was not the case, and Panamon would very much like to find out the truth behind Kel'Thuzad's appearance 2 months earlier. His hidden past had something to do with the spirit creature's unexplained recognition of the giant troll. There had been a trace of fear in those cruel eyes, and Shay found it difficult to imagine how anything mortal could have frightened the powerful skull-bearer. Panamon had seen it too, and certainly he must be asking himself the same question. By the time Kel'Thuzet rejoined them, it was sundown, and the faint rays of the late afternoon sun only barely lit the dark forest. The troll had carefully erased all signs of their passing from the battlefield, leaving a number of confusing false trails for anyone who attempted to follow. Panamon was feeling well enough to maneuver on his own strength, but requested that Kel'Thuzet help support him until they reached a suitable campsite, because it was becoming dark too quickly for travel. Shay was given the task of leading the docile Oral Fane by the rope leash, a chore he did not relish, but which he accepted without complaint. Again, Panamon tried to leave the worn sack and its contents behind, but Oral Fane was not to be deprived of his treasures so easily. He immediately set up such a howl of anguish that the thief ordered him bound about the mouth until the only sound the hapless gnome could make was a muffled groan. But when they tried to move into the forest, the desperate captive threw himself on the ground and refused to rise, even when kicked painfully by a thoroughly irate Panamon. Kel'Thuzet could have carried the gnome and supported Panamon too, but that was more trouble than it was worth. Muttering dire threats at the whining gnome, the thief at last had Kel'Thuzet pick up the sack, and the four began their journey into the darkening woods. When it became too dark to tell with any certainty where they were going, Panamon called a halt in a small clearing between giant oaks, whose interlocking boughs formed a web-like roof for shelter. Oral Fane was tied to one of the tall oaks while the other three set about building a fire and preparing a meal. When the food was ready, Oral Fane was unfettered long enough to allow him to eat. While Panamon did not know exactly where they were, he felt safe enough to permit a fire, relatively certain that no one would be trailing them at night. He might have felt a little less secure had he known of the dangers of the impenetrable forests that surrounded the dark cliffs of Perenor. As it happened, the four men were in an adjoining forest east of the dangerous woodlands ringing Perenor. The section of woods in which they were camped was seldom traveled by the minions of the warlock lord, and there was little possibility that anyone would happen along to discover them. They ate in silence, a hungry and tired group after the long day's travel. Even the whines of the bothersome Oral Fane were temporarily stilled as the little gnome ate ravenously, his crafty yellow face bent close to the warmth of the small fire as the dark green eyes shifted warily from one face to the next. Shay paid no attention, concentrating instead on what he should tell Panamon Creel about himself, the company, and most important of all, the Sword of Shannara. He had not made up his mind when dinner was completed. The captive was again bound to the nearest oak and permitted to breathe without the gag after his solemn promise that he would not begin whining and crying again. Then placing himself comfortably close to the dying fire, Panamon turned his attention to the expectant veilman. "The time is here, Shay, for you to tell me what you know about all this sword business," he began briskly. "No lies, no half-truths, and leave nothing out. I promised my help, but we must have mutual trust, and not the kind I spoke of to this pitiful deserter. I have been fair and open with you. Do likewise for me." So Shay told him everything. He didn't mean to when he started. He wasn't really sure how much he should tell, but one thing led to another, and before he knew it, the whole tale was out in the open. He told about the coming of Alanon, and the subsequent appearance of the Skull-Bearer, which forced the brothers to flee from Shady Vale. He related the events surrounding the journey to Lee and the meeting with Menyon, followed by the terrible flight through the Black Oaks to Cullhaven, where they joined the rest of the company. He skimmed over the details of the journey to the Dragon's Teeth, a great part of which was still hazy in his own mind. He concluded by explaining how he had fallen from the crease into the river and been washed out onto the Rab Plain, where he was captured by the gnome hunting party. Panamon listened without interruption, his eyes wide in astonishment at the tale. Keltset sat next to him in impenetrable silence, the rough-hewn but intelligent face gazing intently at the little Veilman during the entire narration. Orofane shifted about uneasily, groaning and muttering unintelligibly as he listened with the other two, his eyes darting wildly about the campsite as if expecting the warlock lord himself at any minute. "That is the most fantastic tale I have ever heard," Panamon announced at last. "It's so incredible that even I find it hard to believe."
"But I do believe you, Shay. I believe you because I've fought that black-winged monster on the plainlands, and because I've seen the strange power you have over those elf-stones, as you call them. But this business about the sword and your being the lost heir of Shannara? I don't know.
Do you believe it yourself?" "I didn't at first," Shay admitted slowly. "But now I don't know what to think. So much has happened that I can't decide who or what to believe anymore. In any case, I've got to rejoin Elanon and the others. They may even have the sword by this time. They may have the answer to this whole riddle of my heritage and the power of the sword."
Orofane suddenly doubled up laughing, his voice high-pitched and frenzied.
"No, no, they don't have the sword," he shrieked like a fool, caught up in his own madness. "No, no, only I can show you the sword. I can lead you to it. Only I. You can search, and you can search, and you can search. Ha ha ha! Go ahead. But I know where it is. I know who has it. Only I."
"I think he's losing his mind," Panamon Creel muttered humorlessly, and ordered Keltset to re-gag the bothersome gnome. "We'll find out exactly what he knows in the morning. If he knows anything about the Sword of Shannara, which I seriously doubt, he'll tell us or wish he had."
"Do you think he might know who has it?" Shay asked soberly. "That sword could mean so much, not only to us, but to all the peoples of the four lands. We've got to try to find out what he really knows."
"You bring tears to my eyes with that plea for the people," Panamon mocked disdainfully. "They can go hang for all I care. They've never done anything for me, except travel alone, unarmed, with fat purses, and that's been all too infrequently."
He looked up at Shay's disappointed face and shrugged nonchalantly.
"Still, I am curious about the sword, so I might be willing to help you. After all, I owe you a great favor, and I'm not one to forget a favor."
Keltset finished gagging the babbling gnome once again and rejoined them next to the small fire. Orofane had lapsed into a series of small, shrill laughs, coupled with incoherent mumblings that even the cloth gag did not completely muffle. Shay glanced uneasily at the little captive, watching the gnarled yellow body twist about as if possessed by some devil, the dark eyes wide and rolling wildly. Panamon gallantly ignored the moans for a brief time, but at last, losing all patience, leaped to his feet and drew his dagger to cut the gnome's tongue out. Orofane immediately quieted down, and for a while they forgot about him.
"Why do you suppose," Panamon began after a moment, "that Northland creature believed we were hiding the Sword of Shannara? It was strange he wouldn't even argue the point. He said he could sense that we had it. How do you explain that?"
Shay thought for a moment and finally shrugged uncertainly.
"It must have been the Elfstones."
You may be right, Panamon agreed slowly, thoughtfully, his good hand rubbing his chin. I frankly don't understand any of this. Keltzen, what do you think about it? The giant rock troll regarded them solemnly for a moment and then made several brief signs with his hands. Panamon watched intently, then turned to Shay with a disgusted look. He thinks the sword is very important and that the warlock lord is a very great danger to us all. The thief laughed humorously. He's a great help, I must say. The sword is very important, Shay repeated, his voice trailing off in the darkness, and they sat quietly, lost in thought. It was late evening now, the night around them black beyond the faint light of the fire's reddish embers. The woods were a wall of concealment, shutting them into the little clearing, surrounding them with the sharp sounds of the insect world and the occasional cry of some faraway creature. The sky above showed through the boughs of the great trees in patches of dark blue, broken by one or two distant stars. Panamon talked on quietly for a few minutes more as the coals died into ashes. Then he rose, kicking the ashes and grinding them into the earth, bidding good night to his companions with a finality that discouraged further attempts at conversation. Keltzet was wrapped in a blanket and sleeping before Shay had even selected a suitable patch of forest earth. The Veilman felt incredibly weary from the strain of the long day's march and the battle with the Skullbearer. Dropping his blanket, he lay down on his back, kicked off the hunting boots, and stared aimlessly at the blackness above him through which he could just barely discern the limbs of the trees and the shadows of the sky. Shay thought about all that had happened to him, once again retracing mentally his long, endless journey from Shady Vale. So much of it was still a mystery. He had come so far, endured so much, and still he didn't know what it was all about. The secret of the Sword of Shannara, the warlock lord, his own heritage. It was no clearer now than before. The company was out there somewhere, looking for him, led by the secretive, mystic Alamon, who seemed to be the only man with the answers to all the unanswered questions. Why had he not told Shay everything from the beginning? Why had he insisted on giving the company only a piece of the story at a time, always reserving that small bit, always holding back the key to their complete understanding of the unknown power locked in the elusive Sword of Shannara? He rolled over on his side, peering through the darkness to the sleeping form of Panamon Creel just a few feet away. Beyond and to the other side of the clearing, he could hear the heavy breathing of Keltzet blending in with the sounds of the forest night. Oral Fane sat with his back straight against the tree to which he was bound, his eyes shining like a cat's in the dark, unmoving as they stared fixedly at Shay. The Veilman stared back for a moment, unnerved by the gnome's gaze, but finally he forced himself to turn the other way and closed his eyes, dropping off to sleep in a matter of seconds. The last thing he remembered was clutching the small bulk of the elf stones close to his chest within the tunic, wondering if their power would continue to protect him in the days ahead. Shay was awakened abruptly to the gray light of an early forest morning by a long string of venomous oaths of dismay and frustration from a wrathful Panamon Creel. The thief was stamping about the campsite in absolute fury, shouting and cursing all at the same time. Shay could not decide what had happened right away, and it was several minutes before he had wiped the sleep from his eyes and propped himself up on one elbow, squinting wearily in the gloom. He felt as if he had slept no more than a few minutes, his muscles sore and strained, his mind hazy. Panamon continued to storm about the small clearing as Keltzet knelt silently next to one of the great oaks. Then Shay realized that Oral Fane was missing. He leaped to his feet and rushed over, suddenly afraid. In a moment, His worst fears were realized. The ropes that had bound the crafty gnome lay in pieces about the base of the huge trunk. The gnome had escaped, and Shay had lost his one chance to find the missing sword.
"How did he get away?" Shay demanded angrily. "I thought you tied him up, away from anything that might cut his bonds."
Panamon Kria looked at him as if he were an idiot. Disgust registered all over the flushed countenance.
"Do I look like a complete fool? Of course I tied him up away from any weapons. I even tied him to the confounded tree and had him gagged as an added precaution. Where were you? The little devil didn't cut these ropes and that gag. He chewed his way through them."
Now it was Shay's turn to be amazed. "I'm dead serious, I assure you," Panamon continued angrily. "The ropes were chewed through by teeth. Our little rodent friend was more resourceful than I imagined."
"Or perhaps more desperate," the Veilman added thoughtfully. "I wonder why he didn't try to kill us. He had reason enough to hate us."
"Very uncharitable of you to suggest such a thing," the other declared in mock disbelief. "I'll tell you why, though, since you asked. He was terrified that he might be caught in the act. That gnome was a deserter, a coward of the lowest order. He didn't have the courage to do anything but run."
"What is it, Kiltset?"
The huge rock troll had lumbered silently over to his comrade and made several quick gestures, pointing to the north. Panamon shook his head in disgust. "The spineless mouse has been gone since early this morning, hours ago. Worse still, the fool fled northward, and it would not be healthy for us to chase him in that country. His own people will probably find him and dispose of him for us. They won't shelter a deserter."
"Ah, let him go. We're better off without him, Shay.
He was probably lying about the Sword of Shannara anyway." Shay nodded doubtfully, unconvinced that the gnome had been lying about everything he had told them. As unbalanced as the little fellow had seemed, he had nevertheless appeared certain that he knew where the sword could be found and who had possession of it. The whole idea that he knew such a secret was unnerving to the Veilman. Suppose he had gone after the sword. Suppose he knew where it was.
"Forget the whole matter, Shay," Panamon interjected in resignation. "That gnome was scared to death of us. His only thought was to escape. The story of the sword was merely a trick to keep us from killing him until he found the opportunity to escape. Look at this. He left in such a hurry he even forgot his precious sack."
For the first time, Shay noticed the sack lying partially open at the other side of the clearing. It was strange indeed that Orlfane should abandon his treasures after going to so much trouble to persuade his captors to bring them along. That useless sack had been so important to him. And yet there it lay, forgotten, its contents still visible as small bulks beneath the cloth. Shay walked over to it curiously, staring at it with visible suspicion. He emptied the contents onto the forest earth, the swords and the daggers and the jewelry clattering together as they tumbled out in a heap. Shay stared at them, aware that the giant form of Kel'Thuzad was at his side, the dark, expressionless face bent next to his. They stood together, studying the gnome's abandoned hoard as if somehow it held a mysterious secret. Their companion watched for a few seconds, then muttered in disgust and strolled over to join them, glancing down at the weapons and jewelry.
"Let's be on our way," he advised lightly. "We've got to find your friends, Shay, and perhaps with their help we can locate this elusive sword."
"What are you staring at? You've already seen that worthless junk once. It hasn't changed." Then Shay saw it. "It's not the same," he announced slowly. It's gone. He's taken it.
What's gone? Snapped Panamon irritably, kicking at the pile of junk. What are you talking about?
That old sword in the leather scabbard. The one with the arm and the torch.
Panamon looked quickly at the swords in the little heap, frowning curiously. Kelset straightened abruptly and looked at Shay with those deeply intelligent eyes fixed on the little Veilman. He realized the truth as well.
So he took one sword, Panamon growled without stopping to think. That doesn't mean he...
He caught himself, his jaw dropping open in dismay, his eyes rolling back in disbelief.
Oh, no. That can't be. It can't. You mean he has...
He couldn't finish the thought, but choked on his words. Shay shook his head in quiet despair.
The sword of Shannara.
Chapter 21. The same morning that found Shay and his new companions facing the awful truth about the fleeing Oral Fane and the Sword of Shannara also found Alanon and the remaining members of the company embroiled in difficulties of their own. They had escaped from the Druid's Keep under the aged mystic's sure guidance, winding downward through the maze of tunnels in the core of the mountain to the forest land below. They had encountered no initial resistance to their escape, finding only a few scattered gnomes scurrying about the passages, remnants of the broken palace guard that had fled earlier. It was early evening by the time the little band was clear of the forbidding heights and moving northward through the forests. Alanon was certain that the gnomes had removed the Sword of Shannara from the keep some time before the encounter with the Skullbearer in the furnace room, but it was impossible to tell exactly when the removal had been accomplished. Eventine was patrolling the northern perimeter of Paranor, and any attempt to move the sword would be met with resistance from his soldiers. Perhaps the Elven King had already gained possession of the sword. Perhaps he had even intercepted the missing Shay. Alanon was extremely worried about the little Veilman, whom he had expected to find at the Druid's Keep. There had been no mistake when he had made his mental search for the youth back at the foot of the Dragon's Teeth. Shay was in the company of others, and they were moving northward toward Paranor. Something had diverted them. Still, Shay was a resourceful fellow, and he had the power of the Elfstones to protect him from the Warlock Lord. The Druid could only hope that somehow they would find each other without further complications, and that when they did, Shay would be safe and unharmed. Alanon had other worries, however, which demanded his immediate attention. Gnome reinforcements began to arrive in large numbers, and it did not take them long to conclude that Alanon and his little band of invaders had fled the castle and were somewhere in the dangerous, impregnable forest surrounding Paranor. In truth, the gnomes had no idea for whom they were searching. They only knew that the castle had been invaded, and the intruders had to be captured or destroyed. The emissaries of the Warlock Lord had not arrived, and the Skull King himself did not yet realize his prey had escaped him once again. He rested contentedly in the dark recesses of his domain, assured that the troublesome Alanon had been destroyed in the furnaces of Paranor, that the heir of Shannara and the others with him were prisoners, and that the Sword of Shannara was safely on its way to the Northland, intercepted by this time by a Skullbearer whom he had dispatched a day earlier to be certain the precious sword was not retaken. So the newly arrived gnomes began to comb the forests surrounding Paranor in an effort to find the unknown intruders, believing that they would flee south and sending the majority of their hunters in that direction. Alanon and his small band were moving steadily northward, but progress was slowed from time to time with the appearance of large gnome search parties patrolling the woodlands. The little company would never have escaped undetected had they proceeded south, but the enemy numbers were reduced enough to the north that they managed to elude the hunting parties by hiding until they had passed, and then pressing onward.
It was light by the time they finally reached the fringes of the forest and could look northward over the awesome plains of Strelaheim, their pursuers momentarily behind them.
Elanon turned to them, his dark countenance worn and grim, but the eyes still bright with determination. His companions waited as he studied them, one by one, as if he were seeing each for the first time. Finally he spoke, the words slow and reluctant.
"We have reached the end of the road, my friends. The journey to Perenor is at an end, and it is time for the company to disband, and each of us to go his own way. We have lost our chance to gain possession of the sword, at least for the moment. Shay is still missing, and we cannot tell how long it may take to find him. But the greatest threat facing us is an invasion from the north. We must protect ourselves and the peoples of the lands, south, east, and west of us, from that. We have seen no sign of the elven armies of Eventine, though they were supposed to be patrolling this region. It appears they have been withdrawn, and this would only be done if the Warlock Lord had begun to move his armies southward.
Then the invasion has begun, Balinor asked shortly. Elanon nodded solemnly, and the others exchanged startled looks.
Without the sword we cannot defeat the Warlock Lord, so we must attempt to stop his armies. To do this, we must unite the free nations quickly. We may already be too late. Brona will use his armies to seize all of the central Southland. To do this, he need only destroy the border legion of Callahorn.
Balinor, the legion must hold the cities of Callahorn to give the nations enough time to unite their armies and strike back at the invader. Durin and Dale can accompany you to Tirsis and from there travel westward to their own land. Eventine must bring his elven armies across the plains of Strelaheim to reinforce Tirsis. If we lose there, the Warlock Lord will have succeeded in driving a wedge between the armies, and there will be little chance of uniting them. Worse still, the entire Southland will lie open and unprotected. Men will never be able to form their armies in time. The Border Legion of Callahorn is the only chance they have.
Balinor nodded in agreement and turned to Hendel.
What support can the dwarves give us?
The city of Arfleet is the key to the eastern sector of Callahorn.
Hendel pondered the situation carefully.
My people must protect against any assault through the Anar, but we can spare enough men to help defend Varfleet as well. But you must hold the cities of Kern and Tirsis yourself.
The elven armies will help you on the west, Durin promised quickly.
Wait a minute, exclaimed Menyon incredulously.
What about Shay? You've kind of forgotten about him, haven't you?
Still allowing your words to precede your thinking, I see, Elanon said darkly.
Menyon turned scarlet with anger, but waited to see what the mystic had to say.
I'm not abandoning the search for my brother, Flick announced quietly.
Nor am I suggesting you should, Flick.
Elanon smiled at the other's concern.
You and Menyon and I shall continue to search for our young friend, and for the missing sword. I suspect that where we find one, we shall find the other. Remember the words spoken to me by the Shade of Bremen. Shay shall be the first to lay hands on the sword of Shannara. Perhaps he has already done so.
Then let's get on with the search, suggested Menyon irritably, avoiding the eyes of the druid.
We shall leave now, Elanon announced, adding pointedly, but you must see that you keep a closer guard over your tongue. A prince of Lee should speak with wisdom and foresight, with patience and understanding, not with foolish anger.
Menyon nodded grudgingly. The seven said their farewells with mixed emotions and parted. Balinor, Hendel, and the elven brothers turned westward past the forest in which Shay and his companions had spent the night, hoping to circle the impregnable forest and pass down through the hill country north of the Dragon's Teeth and thereby reach Kern and Tirsis within 2 days. Alanon and his two youthful companions moved eastward, searching for some sign of Shae. Alanon was convinced that the Veilman must have eventually come northward toward Paranor, and perhaps was a prisoner in one of the gnome camps in that region. Rescuing him would not be easy, but the druid's greatest fear was that the warlock lord would learn of his capture and find out who he was, then have him immediately executed. If that happened, the Sword of Shannara would be worthless to them anyway, and they would have no choice but to rely on the strength of the divided armies of the three besieged lands. It was not a promising thought, and Alanon quickly turned his attention to the land ahead. Menyon walked slightly in front as they traveled, his keen eyes picking out the trails and studying the footprints of all who had passed. His concern was the weather. If it rained, they would never find the trail. Even if the weather stayed favorable for them, the sudden windstorms that blew across the Strelaheim would have the same effect as a rainfall, erasing all traces of anyone's passage. Flick, dutifully bringing up the rear, walked in abject silence, hoping against hope that they would find some sign of Shae, but fearful that he had seen the last of his brother. By noonday, the barren plains were shimmering with the blistering heat of the white-hot sun, and the three travelers walked as close to the forest edge as possible to take advantage of small patches of shade from the great trees. Alanon alone seemed unperturbed by the fearful heat, his dark face calm and relaxed in the scorching sunlight, free from even the slightest trace of perspiration. Flick felt ready to collapse at any moment, and even the durable Menyon Lee was beginning to feel ill. His sharp eyes were dry and blurred, and his senses were starting to play tricks on him. He was seeing things that weren't there, hearing and smelling images formed by his muddled brain in the seething flatlands ahead. At last the two Southlanders could go no farther, and their tall leader called a brief halt, leading them into the cooling shade of the forest. In silence, they ate a small, tasteless meal of bread and dried meats. Flick wanted to ask the druid more about Shae's chances of surviving alone in that desolate land, but he couldn't bring himself to voice the questions. The answers were all too apparent. He felt strangely alone now that the others were gone. He had never felt close to Alanon, always plagued by nagging doubts about the druid's strange powers. The mystic remained a giant, shadowy figure, as mysterious and deadly as the skull-bearers that pursued them so relentlessly. He remained a personification of the deathless spirit of Bremen that had risen from the netherworld in the Valley of Shale. He was power and wisdom of such magnitude that he didn't seem a part of Flick's mortal world. He was more a part of the warlock lord's domain. That black, frightful corner of the mortal mind where fear is master and reason cannot penetrate. Flick could not forget the terrible battle between the great mystic and the treacherous skull creature which had resulted in a fiery climax in the flames of the furnace beneath the druid's keep. Yet Alanon had saved himself. He had survived what no other man could have survived. It was more than merely uncanny. It was terrifying. Balinor alone had seemed able to deal with the giant leader, but now he was gone, and Flick felt very alone and vulnerable. Menyon Lee felt even less certain of himself. He was not really afraid of the powerful druid, but he was aware that the giant did not think much of him and had brought him along primarily because Shae had wanted him. Shae had believed in the Prince of Lee when even Flick had doubted the adventurer's motives. But Shae was gone now. Menyon felt he had only to anger the druid once more, and the unpredictable mystic would dispose of him for good. So he ate quietly and said nothing, believing that, for the moment, discretion was the better part of valor. When the silent meal was concluded, the druid motioned them to their feet. Again they marched eastward along the fringes of the forest, their faces bathed in the withering heat of the sun, their tired eyes scanning the barren plains for the missing Shay. This time they walked for only 15 minutes before they found signs of something out of the ordinary. Minion spotted the tracks almost immediately. A large number of gnomes had passed that way several days earlier, booted and undoubtedly armed. They followed the tracks northward for about half a mile. Upon topping a small rise of ground, they found the remains of the gnomes and elves who had died in battle. The decaying bodies lay where they had fallen, still untouched and unburied, less than 100 yards from the rise. The three walked slowly down into the graveyard of bleached bones and rotting flesh, the terrible stench rising to their nostrils in sickening waves. Flick could go no farther, and stopped where he was to watch the other two walk into the midst of the dead bodies. Alanon wandered in silent contemplation through the fallen men, studying discarded weapons and standards, glancing only briefly at the dead. Menyon discovered a fresh set of tracks almost immediately and began moving mechanically about the battlefield, his eyes fixed on the dusty earth. Flick could not tell exactly what was going on from his distant vantage point, but it appeared that the Highlander retraced his own steps several times, casting about for traces of new trails, the thin hands shading his reddened eyes. Finally, he turned southward toward the forest and began strolling slowly back toward Flick, his head lowered thoughtfully. He stopped at a large clump of bushes and dropped to one knee, apparently observing something of interest. Momentarily forgetting his distaste for the battlefield and its corpses, the curious Veilman hastened forward. He had just reached the kneeling man's side when Alanon, standing in the center of the battlefield, let out a shout of astonishment. The two men paused and watched silently while the tall black figure peered downward for a moment as if to be certain, then turned and moved toward them in long strides. The mystic's dark face was flushed with excitement when he reached them, and they were relieved to see the familiar mocking smile slowly spread into a wide grin. "Amazing! It is amazing indeed. Our young friend is more resourceful than I had imagined. Up there I found a small pile of ashes, all that remains of one of the skull-bearers. Nothing mortal destroyed that creature. It was the power of the elf-stones." "Then Shay has been here ahead of us," exclaimed Flick hopefully. "No other has the power to use the stones," Alanon nodded assuringly. "There are signs of a terrific battle, tracks that show Shay was not alone. But I cannot tell whether those who were with him were friends or enemies. Nor can I tell if the creature of the north was destroyed during or after the battle between gnome and elf. What have you found, Highlander?"
"A lot of false trails left by a very intelligent troll," Menyon responded wryly. "It's impossible for me to tell much from all the footprints, but I am sure that a large rock troll was among the prior occupants of this field. He left his tracks all over it, but none of them lead anywhere. There are indications that some sort of scuffle took place within these bushes, though. See the bent branches and newly fallen leaves? But more important, there are footprints of a small man. They could be Shay's."
"Do you think he was captured by the troll?" Flick queried fearfully.
Menyon smiled at his concern and shrugged.
"If he could handle one of those skull creatures, then I doubt he would have much trouble with an ordinary troll. The elf stones are no protection against mortal creatures," Alanon pointed out chillingly. "Is there any clear indication which way this troll went?"
Menyon shook his head negatively.
"To be certain, we would have had to find the tracks right away. These tracks are at least a day old. The troll knew what he was doing when he left.
We could search forever and never be sure which way he went.
Flick felt his heart sink at this news. If Shay had been taken by this mysterious creature, then it appeared they had reached another dead end.
I found something else, Al-Anon announced after a moment. I found a broken standard from the House of Elicidal. Eventine's personal banner. He may have been present at the battle. He may have been taken prisoner or even killed. It seems possible that the slain gnomes were attempting to escape from Paranor with the sword and were intercepted by the elf king and his warriors. If so, then Eventine, Shay, and the sword may all be in the hands of the enemy.
I'm sure of one thing, Menyon declared quickly. Those troll footprints and this battle in the bushes took place yesterday, while the battle between the gnomes and elves is several days old.
Yes. Yes, you're right, of course, the druid agreed thoughtfully. There has been a sequence of events taking place that we can't piece together from the little we know. I'm afraid we won't find all the answers here.
What do we do now? Flick asked anxiously.
There are tracks leading westward across the Strelaheim, Al-Anon mused thoughtfully, gazing in that direction as he spoke. The tracks are blurred, but they may have been made by survivors of this battle.
He looked questioningly at the silent Menyon Lee for his opinion.
Our mysterious troll did not go that way, Menyon stated worriedly. He would not bother with a lot of false trails if he were going to leave a clear one when he left.
I don't like it.
Do we have any choice? Al-Anon persisted. The only clear set of tracks leaving this battleground leads westward. We'll have to follow them and hope for the best.
Flick thought that such optimism was unwarranted in view of the hard facts of the situation, and found the comments out of character for the grim druid. Still, it seemed they had little choice in the matter. Perhaps whoever had made those tracks could tell them something about Shay. The little Veilman turned to Menyon and nodded his willingness to follow the druid's advice, noting the look of consternation clouding the Highlander's lean features. Clearly, Menyon was not happy with the decision, convinced that there was another trail to be found that would tell them more about the troll and the slain skull creature. Al-Anon beckoned to them, and retracing their steps, they began the long march back across the Strelaheim Plains to the lands west of Paranor. Flick cast one final look at the field of slain men, their carcasses rotting slowly in the boiling heat of the sun, shunned by man and nature in senseless death. He shook his broad head. Perhaps this was the way it would end for them all. The three travelers walked steadily westward for the remainder of the day. They spoke little, lost in private thoughts, their eyes following almost carelessly the blurred trail before them as they watched the brilliant sun turn red in the horizon and die into evening. When it was too dark to continue, Al-Anon directed them into the bordering forests where they made camp for the night. The trio had reached a point near the northwestern sector of the dreaded impregnable forest, and they were once again in danger of discovery by gnome hunting parties or prowling wolf packs. The resolute druid explained that while they were in some danger of discovery, he believed the search for them would have been abandoned by this time in favor of more urgent matters. As a necessary precaution, they would light no fire and would keep constant watch through the night for the wolves. Flick silently prayed that the wolf packs would not venture this close to the plainland, but would keep to the dark interior of the woods, closer to the druid's keep. They ate a brief, tasteless meal and quickly turned in for the night. Menyon offered to stand the first watch. Flick was asleep in moments, but it seemed he had slept for only an instant when the Highlander awoke him for his turn as guard. About midnight, Al-Anon approached without a sound and ordered Flick to go back to sleep.
The Veilman had been guarding for only about an hour, but he did as he was told, without arguing. When Flick and Menyon awoke again, it was dawn. In the faint red and yellow slivers of sunlight which crept slowly into the shadowed forest, they saw the giant druid resting peacefully against a tall elm as he stared at them. The tall, dark figure seemed almost a part of the forest, sitting there motionlessly, the deep eyes black in the caverns beneath the great brow. They knew that Al-Anon must have stood guard over them all night without sleep. It seemed impossible that he could be rested, yet he rose without stretching, the grim face relaxed and alert. They ate a quick breakfast and marched out of the forest onto the Strelaheim once more. A moment later they halted, in shocked disbelief. All about them the skies were clear and faintly blue in the new light of day, the sun rising in blinding brilliance above the mountain ranges far to the east. But to the north stood a gigantic, towering wall of darkness against the skyline, as if all the ominous thunder clouds of the earth had been massed together and piled one on top of the next to form a black wall of gloom. The wall rose into the air until it was lost in the curving atmosphere of the earth's horizon, and it stretched across all of the rugged Northland, huge, dark, and terrible. Its center, the kingdom of the Warlock Lord. It seemed to foreshadow the relentless, inevitable approach of an endless night.
"What do you make of that?"
Menyon could barely get the question out. For a moment Al-Anon said nothing, his own dark face mirroring the blackness of the northern wall as he stared in silence. The muscles of his lean jaw seemed to tighten beneath the small black beard, and the eyes narrowed as if deep in concentration. Menyon waited quietly, and at last the druid seemed to realize he had spoken, turning to him in recognition.
"It is the beginning of the end. Brona has signaled the start of his conquest. That terrible darkness will follow his armies as they sweep southward, then east and west until the whole earth is blanketed. When the sun is gone in all the lands, freedom is dead too."
"Are we beaten?" Flick asked after a moment. "Are we really beaten? Is it hopeless for us, Al-Anon?"
His worried voice struck a responsive chord within the giant druid, who turned quietly to him, gazing reassuringly into the wide, frightened eyes.
"Not yet, my young friend. Not yet."
Al-Anon led them westward for several hours from that point, staying close to the fringes of the forest, warning Menyon and Flick to keep their eyes open for any sign of the enemy. The skull-bearers would be flying in the day as well as by night, now that the Warlock Lord had begun his conquest, no longer afraid of the sunlight, no longer trying to conceal their presence. The Master was finished with hiding in the Northland. Now he would begin to move into the other lands, sending his faithful spirits ahead of him like great birds of prey. He would give them the power they needed to withstand the sun, the power he had harnessed in the great dark wall that shadowed his kingdom and would soon begin to shadow all of the lands beyond. The days of light were drawing to a close. About mid-morning, the three travelers turned southward on the Strelaheim Plains, keeping close to the western fringes of the forests surrounding Perenor. The tracks they had been following merged at this point with others coming down from the north to continue southward toward Callahorn.